Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome back a very dear friend, a fellow YPOer, and a very, very well-respected entrepreneur from South Africa, Mr. Salim Devji. Salim, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Salim is a strategic entrepreneur with expertise in Africa. He's an experience in telecom, fleet management technology, food, Afro-cosmetic distribution. He's an advisory board creator, a fine dining enthusiast. As I mentioned, he's a fellow member of the YPO, and he's also an OPMer. So Salim, given the amount of experience you have in helping leaders, let me jump straight into the questions. What are the key benefits of being a focused and efficient leader in today's fast-paced world?
Well, first, thank you for having me on again. We had a fantastic time last time. How and what are the benefits of being focused? Okay, so we as entrepreneurs, we as business people, we have a different role and responsibility. We're very privileged to have these opportunities. So being focused is almost a responsibility that we need to take seriously. And why do it? Mm-hmm. Well, we've been given some opportunities. We need to maximize that. So value creation is about understanding where you want to go, why you want to go there. If your priorities are not in place, you're going to end up doing too many things. So you lack the ability to capitalize on value creation. You need to be able to maximize your strengths, your team's strengths. You need to understand what are the priorities. By the way, if you have too many priorities, it means you have no priorities. Mm-hmm. So staying focused is all about value creation for me.
Mm-hmm. Well said, well said. And what are some of the practical strategies leaders can implement to manage their time more effectively?
I have, a fairly interesting way of approaching that. Yeah. In December of every year, maybe even a little bit earlier, I will plan my entire calendar of the following year.
Okay.
And before I do that, I have to first understand how do I want to prioritize the different things. So, of course, you can look backwards, you can look forwards. The reality is you need to sit by yourself and figure out what's important to you. Mm. And in different times of your life, different things will become important. So in order for you to manage your time effectively, it starts with this, identifying what is important to you. Mm-hmm. If you're a budding entrepreneur, obviously spending time in your business is key. Mm-hmm. If your children, by the way, this has happened to me a few times, I'm sure it's happened to many of the listeners and yourself, when your children are getting ready to go into a new school system, mm-hmm. either they're going to go to university or they're shifting from one school to another in preschool, yep. primary school, etc., that becomes your priority. How do you help them? Mm-hmm. If your spouse or if you are having a life crisis, that becomes a priority. Mm-hmm. So understanding what your priorities are first is the key. So for me, I will map it out. And say, okay, this year, by the way, you should start doing this on your own first, alone. And then you should have those that you might affect join in the conversation, your family, your business, etc. So I will say, for example, well, this year I would like that at least 50% of my time is in business, 20% of my time is in YPO, 25% of my time is in family, 5% is in my health and development, et cetera, et cetera. You come up with your equation.
Right.
Then you make your calendar. And then what I do is I color code the amount of time that I will spend month by month on different activities to see if I'm actually matching more or less the percentage. Mm-hmm. I know it could be a little bit overcalculating, but if you are clear on what you're trying to achieve, you should have a plan for it.
Amazing. And I love this thing of dividing up your time. You've done it so beautifully. But my next question, Salim, is how can leaders set clear and achievable goals to align their focus and their efforts effectively?
So expanding on the earlier point, thank you for that question. In order to do this, you need to have a team. So first, you have to understand what you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. Second is you need to be able to prioritize with a team. Mm-hmm. So if I say I want to do A, B, C, D, I can guarantee you I can't do that on my own. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of entrepreneurs like you and I, a lot of entrepreneurs hopefully listening to this conversation, will have amazing ambitions. Mm-hmm. Now, amazing ambitions are never a singular task. Mm-hmm. So I, for example, have an amazing personal assistant. I have an executive assistant. So first, build the team around you that's going to help you get there.
Right.
So you've identified what you want to do. Now you got to figure the how. So the what is done, now the how. Okay. And the when. Right. So when you have that team around you that understands what you're trying to achieve, it makes your life significantly easier. And then identify what are those anchors in that year that are going to be critical and very important to you. For example, in business, it might be your budget review. It might be a sales meeting.
Right.
In your children's life, it might be, you know, going to a university. In your personal life, you might say, oh, I want to go watch Wimbledon. Right. So whatever it is that you want to do in your personal life or in your life generally, identify what those anchors are. And those start creating, it starts creating a placeholder in your life, in your calendar. You start looking forward to that graduation. You start looking forward to that Wimbledon game. You start looking forward, hopefully, to your budget reviews because hopefully you're doing well.
Yeah.
So I think that is, you know, achievable goals are really based on setting milestones for yourself. Now, I don't want to go into all this technical OGSM and this is how you do it and set up a strategy. Of course, you want to do all of that. But find the elements in all of that that's really exciting you in your life and have the team to help you get there.
Oh, fascinating. Great response. Thank you. My next question, Salim, is what are some of the common distractions that leaders often face and how can they overcome these distractions to stay on track?
So the obvious one everyone will know is social media. But I think it's not the answer that you're keen on. It's really on what do you do about it. And so what I will share is something that I struggle to do. But a professor of mine and a friend of mine actually shared this. He goes, when I go on holiday, I uninstall WhatsApp and mail from my phone.
Wow.
So I actually have no option but to chill, but to relax. Okay, so I haven't actually done that. I my phone is permanently on silent. Sorry for those that know me that are listening to this, but I usually would like to have the opportunity to call you back, then to be expected to answer every single time I get calls because an entrepreneur will get lots of calls. Of course, not everyone can do that. If you're answering the call for business, you have to take care of that.
Yeah.
So for me, making sure that you're controlling the social media engagement is key as a distraction. Second is the world is shifting very quickly. So we might say, okay, I want to do X, Y, Z, but the parameters around you are no longer the same because you planned several months ago. So be ready to be flexible. So it's a mindset. It's a mindset. And so if you're able to stick to your priorities, allowing for some flexibility, your expectations with the world becomes a little bit easier. Otherwise, you start getting a little bit disappointed with what's happening around you. Wow, I really plan to go and do this. Man, the traffic is so bad. Or that flight got canceled. Or the weather this or the weather that. So the reality is setting yourself for flexibility, understanding that change happens outside of your control. If you're too rigid on that, you'll become frustrated and that becomes difficult. But always have a plan. I mean, distractions will come, but if you have a plan A and plan B, it becomes easier to manage.
Well said, well said. But a follow-up question, for a lot of leaders, how do they begin to build this plan that you have so successfully done?
So one thing I would absolutely recommend is stick to simplicity and identify people who have been on the road that you wish to go. I find, and I'm going to use back the social media, over the last decade plus, you find a plethora of people that say, okay, let me show you the seven steps of this. Let me show you this. Let me show you how to build, you know, strong abs. Let me show you how to do this. So there's so much happening around you. So the first thing I would say is stay simple, identify what you want to do, and then find someone who has already gone through that road. I mentioned a little bit about the support system, and maybe this is a good time to elaborate on that. Hire well. Okay, yeah. So that whatever it is that you're trying to achieve is more than likely to be able to happen. But my feeling is with so much noise around us, if you don't take a step back, you will always be in the noise. And when you're in the noise, not only can you not hear yourself, you can't hear what's happening around you.
Right.
So take a step back, get a great coach, find a mentor, identify someone, again, who has been where you want to go. It is very difficult for someone who's not been where you want to go. It's like going to a professor and say, I want to build this business. And they say, oh, yeah, well, you do the business plan and you check your finances and blah, blah, blah. Go to an entrepreneur who's done the business. He goes, okay, yes, you've got your template, but let me tell you where you're going to fail. And that's what you need. Well, that's what you require to help you become more successful.
Wonderful. Thank you. My next question, Salim, is that delegation is a crucial component for effective leadership. What strategies can leaders use to effectively delegate without micromanaging?
So another amazing question. Most people who have built businesses have built it with their own hands, most, right? And so now to take your hands away from what you've built is one of the hardest tasks that you can do.
Absolutely.
So the way to be able to do that is you need to identify a group of people that you can trust. Okay. So the first step is identifying people that you can trust. The second step is being able to have systems and processes in place. In effect, you know, often people will say, and I've been a part of this in some of the advisory boards that I've created, one of the conversations I've had is that entrepreneurs or shareholders will say, yes, well, we've got to keep these people in the system because we trust them.
Yeah.
But they're no longer the individuals that can take the business to another level. And so you have to have system and processes for that. And then you need to bring a different set of people for that. Okay. So in effect, you do need both. So if you're able to delegate into a system that has trusted individual, that's prize number one. So SOPs, having a platform, having, you know, whatever it is that you've got as an entrepreneur, that's going to become key. So I would say that's number one. Number two is I do a lot of psychometric assessments. So if I want to hire someone to be able to do something, I want to ensure that they're ideally have the personality to be able to do that. So the persona is important, but also one that I'm able to connect with. Also one that has the skills that I don't have.
Right.
Because the larger we become as an organization, the more different skill sets are required for us to be able to expand. And so I would humbly recommend nose in, hands out. This was taught to me by a friend who has since passed, and he shared this with me. He says, as an entrepreneur, we always want to have our hands all the time in, but we're stopping others from being able to do what we've asked them to do, right? So it's contradictory. So smell once in a while, but keep your hands out. Let the people you've hired, hopefully competent people, do what they're supposed to do.
Fantastic. Thank you. What a wonderful response. My next question, Salim, is how can leaders foster a culture of continuous improvement within their teams and themselves to enhance overall efficiency?
When I join any organization, one of my first requests, I would say it's almost a non-negotiable, is I want to engage in an organization that invests in learning. If you're not a learning organization, I don't want to be part of it. And by the way, if you're not, but you allow me to make you so, I'm very happy to engage.
Okay.
So I think fundamentally incorporating and cultivating a culture of always wanting to grow, always wanting to learn. And by the way, it could be just asking everyone every day, 15 minutes, here's an article, everyone have a read of that article, or learn a new language, which by the way, you should, if you're in a country, a foreign country, you should learn the local language, watch a podcast, do anything, watch this, do anything, just learn. So we all know, right, that if you stay static, you're gonna die, right? So change is inevitable, change is constant. So my humble recommendation is that anytime you are into an environment, ensure that it is a learning environment. So if you can build a culture of continuous progress, continuous learning, the system itself pushes itself forward.
Very, very interesting. One more question relating to leadership, and then I want to move to another segment. Given today's explosion of technology, what role can technology and digital tools play in helping leaders streamline their tasks and communication for greater efficiency?
So first, I think it's very clear there's no ifs and buts. Technology is helping us do much more in our lives and in our businesses. So I think that's a given. And the role that it plays is it gives you significantly better output. The disadvantage of that is now there's an expectation that everyone is supposed to significantly increase their output. Now, yes, using technology, you should be able to do that. A simple example, we have WhatsApp and you can communicate on WhatsApp. Instant communication, yeah, very good. But should it be 24 hours? I don't know. At 10 p.m., should you be expecting that your employees are answering their WhatsApp? No, in my humble opinion, right? Absolutely. So the role of technology is to make us more efficient. But the element of the human touch should never be forgotten. In fact, going back to how does a leader maximize value? And I mentioned, have a circle of people that are able to help you become better. They should be using a lot of the technology to help you. Absolutely. But if you're stuck on technology, you're not lifting your head to see what's happening around you. Right. Of course, I'm looking at the phone in this case. But I think that the human element and the human touch is a necessary component of technological development. Right. We should never use technology in its exclusively so that we're only communicating. I mean, I'm loving having this conversation with you as opposed to sending you a WhatsApp. I've had so many conversations with people, and sometimes I know I could handle that on WhatsApp or on an email, but I want that human connection. Otherwise, what, do we become machines? We actually become less caring by not engaging human to human.
Fantastic. Thank you. Salim, you're also an advisory board creator, and therefore you work with, you know, operating shareholders. My next few questions are in the challenges of managing operating shareholders. So my first question is, in what ways do operating shareholders impact day-to-day operations of a company, and how does this differ from passive or non-operating shareholders?
Great question. So with the operating and non-operating shareholders, depending on the size and depending on the scale of business, there's a huge difference. For a small business, the operating shareholder, you really act as a mentor, as a guide, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, helping with, you know, implementing systems, etc. The non-operating shareholders, often the businesses are larger and the mindset is different. So ideally, what we should be doing is identifying how do operating leaders become non-operating leaders, because then by definition, they're growing their businesses and they're becoming guides themselves. They're growing and creating more value in the system. So an operating leader, I think the first guidance I would give to them is identify yourself a right coach, have a good plan in action, and try to find a timeline at which you replace yourself. Because that's what I would consider progress, right? If you've got one shop, now you've got 10 shops. Now you've got 100 shops. Okay, maybe you made 100 shops. Oh, well done. Can you do 1,000 shops? The operating shareholder will say yes. But I think somebody from the outside would say, my friend, are you kidding? You grew from here to here, but you actually have no experience to go from 100. You're working in country A, and now you want to work across the continent, let's say of Africa. You don't have that experience. Bring someone that does. Watch them, guide them, and let's expand into new opportunities. So a very different approach.
Very well said. My next question is, how can companies strike a balance between granting influence to operating shareholders and ensuring a smooth and efficient decision-making process?
So the influence of a shareholder, in my case, when we speak about advisory boards, what we do is we identify the needs of the organization. And then we bring in people that have the skill sets to be able to influence the shareholders to make those changes.
Right.
And by the way, the first part of all of this is a mindset shift, right? A shareholder, operating or non-operating, must be willing to accept ideas and thoughts. And it starts with a mind shift. So if an operating shareholder does not want to leave, there's no influence happening. So the first ability, the first task to do is to make sure that they're willing to change. By the way, saying is one thing, acting is completely different.
Right.
I would say that, you know, influence starts with the mind shift. Okay. And then in a world where, I'm sorry, I've lost the second part of your question.
No, my second part was that, How do businesses ensure that personal interests of operating shareholders align with the broader goals and mission of the company?
The mission of a company, the alignment to what the shareholder wants, is very much dependent on one-on-one conversations independently with the shareholder. So very often what I will do is I will sit with the shareholder, and this is a very an actual example. I sat with a shareholder who had phenomenal success. I said, where do you want to go? And he said, oh, I want to build the businesses. I said, yeah, but where exactly? How exactly? Are you looking for more stores? Yeah. And they struggle with articulating their own vision or their own mission. So the question I will ask them is, okay, who do you want to be like? Now, when you ask that question, it crystallizes what's in their head that they're not able to articulate. Right. So they will say something, I want to be like Procter & Gamble. I want to be like GE. I want to be like Tata. Depending on where you come from, you will have different reference points. Once that happens, okay, fine. You have that picture clear in your head. Now, how do we get there? So the conversation, the one-on-one engagement allows you to understand their mission, their vision. And then I go back to that mindset change. Once you've identified where you want to go, you ask the question, okay, who do we need to help us get there? But now what you've done is you've opened up the world of possibility, because now the destination is set. I want to be like XYZ. Okay, what did XYZ do to get there? So that's how I would engage in the conversation to be able to set the platform for continuous growth based on the mission vision of what the shareholder has expressed.
Amazing. And Salim, my last question to you, how can businesses prepare for and adapt to the potential challenges of managing future generations of operating shareholders?
That's so interesting, because we're having those types of conversations as we speak on some advisory boards. And one of the key challenges is, again, identify who's gone through that. So yes, we can hire, you know, the big four, we can hire specialists, family business for governance and structure. No problem. You got your framework, right? So no problem. But who has actually gone through it? So identify who's gone from G1, G2, G3. It said, right, G1 builds a business, G2 tries to sustain it, G3 basically breaks it. And so when you've got a family that says, I've got a 100-year vision, I want to have sustainability. I would like my business to be here far beyond me and my children.
Right.
You set the platform for that. Identify who's been there. And by the way, you will find some of those in the US and in Japan and some parts of Europe. But in a lot of the developing world, you don't have multiple generations of entrepreneurs. So they will need reference points. So they need to go, ideally, to see those that are in 8th, 9th, 10th generation. How did you last so long? And by the way, for me, the secret is always values. They have maintained values over the generations. The businesses might have changed, but oftentimes the value does not. You can say that ties back to their purpose, actually. Right? The purpose is not. We want to make impact. We want to make a difference. We want to be able to provide value. We want to make our country become a country of significance on the world stage. We will play a part in that. And by the way, India is doing a phenomenal job today in that landscape.
Well said. Salim, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. I just love the conversation about leadership and managing operating shareholders. Two specific points that I picked up, which were so fascinating, is too many strategies means no strategy. And the second one you said was nose in, hands out. I think that is, again, such a powerful set of four words, which people must understand when you start to look at delegation. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.